Coming up, Lav and I give you the full U.S. Open treatment live from Wingfoot. Welcome to the Golf Central Podcast, brought to you by the all-new P770 from TaylorMade. Why practice a high draw if you got a fade? If you can hit high, why master the stinger? Because the key to better golf is having options you can count on. That's why TaylorMade took everything they learned from making the P790, the forged face, the speed foam, all its DNA, and put it into a smaller package. Introducing P770, let the sibling rivalry begin. Available at your local golf retailer or TaylorMadeGolf.com for promo code GOLFCHANNEL for free 2-day shipping on any order. Lav, I want to get directly to this, and we are outside, by the way. It's a beautiful
day. This is glorious, right? It's 71 degrees. We're sitting outside the media center here at Wingfoot, and inside the media center, we should note out that we are each situated in our own personal glass cases of emotion. We are in those glass cases. We have our wipes. We have our masks. We have our sanitizer, and we even have some snacks. And it's been a terrific experience. We all got tested in order to be on site here. So it's like we got our own personal little bubble here at Wingfoot, and the access has been a little bit better than some PGA Tour events. We're loving this right now.
It is. No, it's absolutely getting better. I think players are becoming more comfortable with it. I think officials are becoming a little bit more comfortable with it. As long as you wear your mask and you're socially distanced. And again, this week is different than maybe the weeks we've spoken since the restart in June, because we are technically in the bubble. We were both tested multiple times and came back negative multiple times. Congratulations.
How was that saliva test? I told the lady this was the hardest thing I've ever done in my entire life. I'm working my mouth in order to get the proper amount of spit and or saliva into the tube. It was really hard.
You can't see the visual, but we are actually on a Zoom call, even though we're 10 feet away from each other. But so you have to be on the Zoom call when you do the spit test. They have to watch you. And the gentleman asked me, have you eaten or drank anything in the last 30 minutes? And I said, absolutely not. And he said, have you chewed gum in the last 30 minutes? And my response was,
nope.
And I spit my gum out on the camera. Nope, not me. And he let it slide. Luckily, it was still negative, so we got to move on. No, it has been a good experience. And a couple things today stood out to me from the USGA press conference that we can touch on later. But you and I are about to sit down and kind of write our punch shots for GolfChannel.com. And the first one we always peck away at is winner. So I'm going to give you the floor. Who's going to win?
You want to start with winner. You don't want to build up to winner.
No, I don't want to build up the winner, and because I did this on purpose. I want to build up the biggest disappointment, because I think this is where you and I are going to disagree the most.
Now I feel like we should get in the biggest disappointment. We can't do winner first. What kind of kind of preview podcast is this? Don't you work in TV occasionally. You ever heard of a tease?
I feel like, again, I understand what you're saying. I feel like we're going to have more disagreements on things other than the winner. I think you and I – okay. I'm not going to play this.
All right,
I wrote a column yesterday. John Rahm is my winner. So your thoughts on John Rahm?
I love John Rahm this week. I don't think it's any
See?
Accident.
Look at TV.
I don't think it's any accident that John Rahm was the winner at both Muirfield Village and Olympia Fields for the BMW Championship this year. I mean, he's proven, I think, not only to his peers, but I think also to himself, that he does now have the mental game to handle some adverse conditions, to handle when he necessarily hits a good shot that turns out poorly. I'm not sure that was the case a couple years ago. Those would tend to be some flame-ups, and he would flame himself out of consideration. But he held tough in very difficult conditions at Jack's Place, and certainly the way that he played on the weekend in Chicago, I think, showed to himself also that he can, if the winning score is going to be somewhere around par, I think he knows now that he can hang with anybody, if not beat them all.
I think anything around par is optimistic, honestly. I heard some of the best advice I've heard in a long time when it came to Wingfoot from a caddy the other day, saying that he's telling his man, let's pretend like par is 72. If you can shoot par every day for 4 days.
8 over.
Yes. And they feel like that's a good starting spot. He said if you can get one round under par, something around 70, that's great. So because 600 seems like the target score for most people. But he likes his chances at 8.
I don't think so. I heard some members chirping the other day, and of course I was eavesdropping, like the dirtball that I am. And they were talking. They want to see something between 2 over and 5 over. 5 over, of course, was the winning score
for Jeff
in in 2006. Two over to me feels like a little bit of a sweet spot here. I think the greens are just soft enough to keep the scores from getting somewhat out of control. I'm not sure that would be the case if we were playing this tournament in June. But with how cool the temperatures are, with how much water they've had to put on this golf course, they're in a severe drought in this area. I think somewhere between 2 and 5 over par is going to be a winning shot. I'd be shocked if it's as high as 8.
I think 6 is probably would be my target, but I see where this caddy is coming from. That don't allow yourself to get drawn away by the idea that you've shot over par the first 2 or 3 rounds. And I certainly see where it's coming from. Now, I will say this, I just talked to a couple of players and wrote an item for golfchannel.com on it, comparing how it played in 06 in June versus what they think it's going to play like this week in September. As we pointed out, it's going to be perfect fall weather this week. The lows in the mid-40s starting on Friday, highs around mid-60s.
We're going to really enjoy those 6:20 a.m. hits in yes. low 40s weather,
yeah,
aren't we?
Yes. I did not bring my fall weather there because there is no fall in Florida, and I don't really think in those terms. But the one thing that stood out to me is the greens are actually better this week, which seems it would mitigate a little bit of how difficult this golf course is, meaning that you can probably make a little bit more putts than you could when it was played.
You seen the slopes on these things?
No, those factor in, and they certainly factor in. But the other half is the rough is much, much harder. The way it was explained to me, in June when it's hot, it almost gets straw-like, wispy. By comparison to what it is now, it's juicy. I mean, it's tangy. It's almost like it's waiting for him. When you hear stories of Patrick Reed telling me that he lost 3 golf balls on one hole and they actually looked for him for 5 minutes, he and his caddy, Kessler, they looked for him for 5 minutes and he was only a yard off the fairway. That is terrifying.
I really hope the USJ has their full force of marshals because they're going to need it. Gary Woodland told the story yesterday about how his caddy just threw him a ball around the green. He couldn't find it. Couldn't find it for 5 minutes until he stepped on it, and it just so happened to be right there in front of him. And you also have to keep in mind, Rex, not having spectators on property is a huge difference in terms of the atmosphere and the energy and just the general vibe around a major championship. You also have to consider the fact that that rough is not going to be trampled down by 40,000 spectators a day. You can listen to
That's
Phil Mickelson
and
what he did in 2006. He wanted to miss big because he knew that he was going to have a flatter lie with the grass going towards the green. It was going to be easier when he did misfire. That's not the case this week. If you miss wide, it is going to be absolutely dead. Even a few paces off the fairway is absolutely dead. So you're going to be looking at punch outs. You're going to be looking at guys advancing at just a few feet, except if you're Bryson DeChambeau, who thinks that he can just swing a 9-iron 110 miles an hour and force the ball physically onto the front of the green.
And maybe he can. I mean, that's the experiment that we've all been talking about and waiting for. These harder golf courses, how does the Transform Bryson work out? So as far as our punch shots go, we have addressed winning score, and I will just jump to the next one then since you want to do it in reverse order.
Hold on, I want to go back to winning score. How do you think today's players would handle a winning score that would be in that 6 to 8 over range? Keep in mind, over the past decade, it's been pretty docile in terms of the winning score and some of the setups we've seen, whether it was Aaron Hills or it was Pinehurst with Martin Kaymer going nuts, or obviously what Rory did at Congressional. There hasn't been a 5-over score since the back-to-back Ogilvy and Angel Cabrera years at Wingfoot and Oakmont in 2006-2007 when you had 5-over par winning score. How do you think today's players would handle that? They don't like being embarrassed. They don't like shooting big scores and not being rewarded for good shots.
I think they've prepared themselves mentally. To your point, I totally agree that, look, no one complains more than a tour player about a golf course setup simply because it's their livelihood. They do not want to be embarrassed. They don't want to make the bogeys, even though that this is the U.S. Open and everyone knows you should prepare yourself for that. Normally they don't. This being the exception, I thought Rory said it best. I didn't even think it was you who asked him the question about, like, where's the line between goofy golf and a tough setup? And he went kind of straight to the heart of what you were trying to get at, that I don't see it getting to goofy golf. It's hard. 6-7 over par is going to win. I think we're all sort of bracing for that. Certainly the players have wrapped their mind around that. But it's to the point now where, in his comparison, was Oakmont, where it seems like when you show at Oakmont, you're on the razor's edge. And you know one bad forecast, and Shinnecock would probably fall in this category as well. One bad forecast, one bad move by the USGA, and they're going to fall over that edge. It's going to become unfair. Guys are going to scream, and we're going to go down this cycle that we always seem to fall down. It seems like every 2 or 3 years with the U.S. Open. They don't have that vibe this week, which is interesting. They will tell you this is going to be hard, regardless if it's played in June or September. This is a very, very demanding golf course, but none of them are standing there whispering, not even to the side, whispering to you, this could get out of hand. You're not even getting that, and I think it's a testament to the golf course.
Yeah, I think it all comes down to the setup, and I don't think the USGA is in any position right now to want it to get weird and to want it to get to a point where the players are embarrassed. They've had a come to Jesus moment over the past couple of years. There seems to be a better relationship between the players and the USGA. I think the quote today from John Bodenhammer is, "We will let Wingfoot be Wingfoot," and Wingfoot by itself is very, very hard. You don't have to do any tricks in order to make this place play over par over 72 holes.
Okay, I'm going to jump next right to the next one. Biggest disappointment for you?
So this is where we're supposed to disagree.
I think we're going to disagree, but yes, this is why I wanted to save it for last. But since you don't have any interest in making good TV, let's move on.
You mean I have a profound interest in making great TV? But my biggest disappointment are going to be Tiger and Phil. Tiger in the practice round shots that I've seen, he's still plagued by the same ball striking issues that we've seen ever since the restart. He's just not driving it well. His irons aren't as sharp as he usually is. And his putting, I know you've talked about it, and you talked about it with Tiger and asked him about it. His putting is just not where it was. I think that's obvious. He's shown declines over the past couple of years. And you look at his stats, he would have been ranked outside the top 150 on the PGA Tour this past season in strokes gained putting had he had enough rounds to qualify. I mean, it is a big issue that doesn't seem to be getting immediately addressed. So I would put Tiger in the biggest disappointment. I think Phil, last week coming off a 21% driving accuracy week in Napa, this golf course is obviously even more penal than what you saw at Silverado. That redemption story that everyone would want to write, especially me, on Sunday, it's just not going to happen. I think both of them are likely to miss the cut.
See, this is why I wanted to do this last, because there is no way you can say Tiger and Phil are going to be the biggest disappointment, because to be a disappointment, you had to have some sort of expectations coming into this. And outside of the people, I think, in their immediate circle.
Everyone's talking about Phil this week. Oh, can
realistically,
he write that
story? No one is talking about him realistically being able to shun away the demons of 06. No one is realistically saying that. Maybe Phil. Maybe the people in his circle. But no one thinks at 50 years old he could possibly – you spoke to him yesterday. You wrote it yourself that he seems to have come to terms with the fact that, yep, I'm probably not going to win this one. So I don't know where you're getting biggest disappointment, because it seems to me that he's fine in his plot in life. Now, we can have a separate conversation about Tiger, but Phil is fine with his plight in life. But you seem to want to put out there that, oh, biggest disappointment, he didn't win it again.
Phil's plight or Phil's plot in life? Those are two wildly different things. Phil Mickelson almost won three golf tournaments this year. I mean, it's not like he's been chopping up. I know it was against the seniors a couple of weeks ago, but he still looked very, very good at that point. And Phil has not conceded. He's not waved the white flag that he's not going to win this week.
What was the quote you used yesterday?
He's looking at his career big picture, in the sense that he's 50 now and that anything after this would be a bonus win. That is the term he used. A bonus win, and of course it would. These are 144 of the best players in the world. Phil said he's added loft to his driver. He's going to try not to swing it as hard. He's going to use more three woods. It's not going to matter. He's not going to win this golf tournament.
He's not. That's my whole point. You know that, so there's no way you can make him the biggest disappointment. How you're doing this opposite. Had he come out and win, that would have been the biggest surprise, would it not?
Surprise? I'm not sure how you can say it would be a huge surprise. I mean, he's still a very good player. He almost won a WGC event this year. He almost won a European Tour event. He almost won at Pebble.
I don't know that I would even pick him for the top lefty this week, although I'm looking at some odds that show him as the top lefty.
Who else is under consideration? Brian Harman?
Brian Harm and Bubba Watson, and then Robert McIntyre.
Ooh.
Ooh.
I'd take Robert McIntyre over any of those guys. Although I'm not sure Bobby's been playing much over on the European Tour.
And I'm having a hard time even finding his straight-up odds, which leads me to believe that they're somewhere outside of that top 150-1 category, which, again, by definition is a dark horse. It's someone that you don't have very high expectations for. As far as Tiger, your point about the putting, very valid. I just did a hit on Central about this. Two-year strokes game putting, it's the first time in his entire career since they started doing this stat in 2004 where he would have finished the season negative in strokes game putting. And so this is going to come down to two of those things that he hasn't done well this season: drive the ball and putt. So yes, that my expectations for him are equally as low, which is there's no way I would make him my biggest disappointment on that front. I'm going to go a little bit different route on that, and I'm actually going to say DJ. I think the expectations, yes. Yeah, and it's by design. Oh, my God.
Please enlighten us.
I just think the pressure, this feels a lot like, remember when
the pressure?
Remember when he went into the Masters and he was the favorite? Now, granted, he'd hurt himself, and he never got an opportunity to do that. So you need to point that out. What I'm pointing out here is that when you put DJ in that situation where you feel like, oh, there's no way he's going to get beaten, throughout the course of his career, you can kind of track it. He has gotten beaten. I just don't know. He clearly wasn't the best player at Eastlake 2 weeks ago, even though he won the event. He had the handicap. You know,
he was third best that week.
He put in for a false handicap and ended up winning that tournament. But
Yes,
I felt that pain before. I just don't think – I mean, look, I certainly see all the arrows pointing to Dustin, and you can make a lot of good arguments. I just – this is the smell test, and I don't know if he's passing the smell test this
stinky
particular week.
He's a little too stinky for you?
Stinky, but there's a rosé to it.
as you predicted, I completely disagree. Yeah. I'm not sure where you're getting the sense that there's so much pressure on Dustin Johnson this week. I mean, John Rahm is playing just as well, if maybe slightly worse than him. If anyone is feeling major pressure, wouldn't that pressure be more applied to Rory McIlroy, who doesn't have a major title now in more than 6+ years?
Again, I'm applying the idea of how high expectations are, period, for a player. And the way Rory has played since the restart, I don't know
Who's putting expectations on this? There's 20 media members here. There's no fans out here. There's no fans clamoring for DJ to get another major.
I think expectations are always going to be there regardless of fans or not. I mean, if you think these guys ignore what happens in the ethos around them or in the universe around them, I think you're being foolish. I think Rory knows exactly where he's at on those odds lists. I think DJ knows exactly where he's at. He's the favorite. He knows that.
You think he cares?
Sure. I think somewhere deep down inside, you kind of put that added pressure on yourself. And if he hasn't even looked at the odds, he knows he's the PGA Tour Player of the Year and the FedEx Cup champion and the world number one. That's all you kind of need to know, right? So on any written history, he would be the guy that you would point to and go like, yep, he's the one that's going to win this. And I do think that applies pressure. Now, whether if DJ feels it or not, I'm not 100% sure. Again, I kind of go back to the over the course of his career, and he is playing the best golf of anyone right now. I'm not going to dismiss that. I just look at history over the course of his career. When it comes to major championships specifically, I don't know that he delivers on that regular basis like we've seen in the past, like we've certainly seen from Tiger, like we've seen from Rory, like we've seen from Jordan Spieth in his prime. We've seen it from other players, and you haven't seen it from Dustin.
I hope I'm
wrong. Trust me, I hope I'm wrong.
I think this major championship and the Open Championship in particular, I think favorites mean less. And by that I mean, I think players have come to an understanding when you get to these tournaments that there's going to be some weird things that go on, that you're going to get some bad bounces, that you're going to miss some fairways when you thought you'd hit them and they ended up turning into bogeys. There's some devilish putts that you're going to three putt. There's going to be some weird things that happen. It's not like the Masters. I think the Masters applies the most pressure to any player because that golf course is suited to a particular player. I think that Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, and Rory McIlroy, if you could just pick three players, I think they feel an enormous amount of pressure to perform every time they get there because they feel like they should perform well. I don't necessarily feel like that's the case when you get to a U.S. Open where you know that some weird things are going to happen. And I think the same thing applies with the Open Championship. When you know that a lot of it is determined by the luck of the draw, whether you're going to get those 30-mile-an-hour gusts in the afternoon or things are just going to get out of control. So I think that kind of alleviates some of the pressure. So I think that's one factor. I think not having fans here, it's just another 72-hole stroll. The U.S. Open, yes, it has some more infrastructure here than even probably the PGA Championship did. But the PGA Championship didn't feel any different than the Tour Championship, or it felt like it was the Memorial, which felt no different than the Charles Schwab Challenge. I mean, there is a sameness to this. Yes, it's a little bit bigger. You know that history is at stake. But I think without fans, without that energy, without that atmosphere, yes, there's still going to be nerves. I just think it's toned down a little bit. I think DJ is immune to it even more than most.
I think you're ignoring the degree of difficulty when it comes to this specific golf course as it applies to, you're going to know you're in a U.S. Open the first time you're in that rough, right?
Yeah.
You're going to know when you step to the third tee, it's a par three, and you're thinking, maybe my best option here is to lay up. You would never think that anywhere else. You're going to know. No one's going to have to be there to cheer for you to know that you're playing in what is the most demanding test in golf, the U.S. Open. So that's
why I think it's a great equalizer. I think the rough and the challenge of this golf course is a great equalizer, where you don't have a player like Dustin Johnson, who's unquestionably playing the best golf of anyone in the world. But I think when you get to conditions that are this difficult, it sort of neutralizes his advantage. Now, if he plays great, he's going to blitz the field like he would at any other place. But when you get some potentially dodgy lies in the rough and the greens that are this sloping and this quick, I think you can just – you can't necessarily throw out the records, but I think some of his advantage is certainly negated, and I think that alleviates some of the pressure or the burden he might feel as the odds makers' favorite heading into this championship.
Okay, moving on. Long shot, as you defined it originally, top 25, and then you quickly changed it to top 50 in the world to top 10. So the long shot to top 10.
I'm going to go with Mackenzie Hughes. And nice. If you recall, Rex, Mackenzie Hughes, who I think is ranked, 56 in the world? Mackenzie Hughes has top 10'd at PGA National, Muirfield Village, and Olympia Fields. What do those three golf courses have in common?
I think they were the three of the five toughest courses on tour last season.
Three of the top four, correct. Mackenzie Hughes is the only one who has that distinction so far this year. He had another top 10 finish at the Tour Championship just a couple of weeks ago. He has a world-class short game. That's the reason why he was able to play so well on those three golf courses. I do expect that to continue this week. And to be honest, Rex, it wouldn't surprise at all if he had a top 10 this week and was there with a chance early Sunday.
You hate the way I play this game. I'm going with Patrick Reed, who is number 10 in the world, and it falls.
This is a long shot.
Yeah, I know. Again, you're going to you hate this game, but like your definition of within the top 50 in the world.
No, outside the top 50. Why would a long shot be inside the top 50?
Well, why couldn't we have keep it in the top 25? I feel like you're making up rules now.
Well, even that wouldn't apply. Patrick Reed isn't he ranked top 12 in the world?
Oh, man.
Were you really just going to go with Patrick Reed as a?
I was.
As a long shot.
As I quickly scan, number 74, Cameron Champ, stands out to me
Hold on, can we go back to this? You thought that Patrick Reed, a Masters champion, a WGC winner this year, and I think, can you correct me? Is he inside the top 12 in the world? He is.
Yes, he's number 10. I said that at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. So you thought that would be a good long shot pick?
I feel like it. I felt like it was.
Wow. You talked to the guy a half hour ago, and suddenly you just want to ride him all the way to the finish line.
No, I didn't talk to him at all. I talked to someone who played a practice round with him who said his short game was off the charts.
As usual.
But, I mean, to the degree that he missed five fairways and nine holes the other day and got up and down five out of five times. If you're going to do that at Wingfoot, that's a pretty good indication that you're ready to play this golf course. But now playing by the rules as they were presented, Cameron Champ stands out to me. I feel like his game's rounding into shape after not a great season, but I really like he's got a new caddy on the back, John Wood, who I think is going to do him a world of good. And I think he's the type of player, as we pointed out, how long and difficult this golf course was or is, that can come out, and as long as he keeps it relatively straight, you're not going to hit every fairway. You're going to have to lay up. I've never seen so many players practice 70 and 80 yard wedge shots in my life because they know that that's what they're going to have when their third shots on par fours. But I think he has enough game to sort of stand out in that crowd. All right, lock to top 10.
And I actually just talked to Cameron Champ about an hour ago. He told me he's going to hit driver on almost every single hole. And he said, Rex, the longest iron that he's having into these par fours is an 8-iron. It's a huge advantage when you think about where some of the pins are going to be cut on these sections of these tiered greens. And you also can remember he was in the hunt at the PGA Championship. I think that experience can certainly help him going forward.
Absolutely. So I like my pick all of a sudden a lot more than I did a few moments ago. Lock to top 10.
Here's where I went with my 1B pick. So Dustin obviously is my 1A pick. Even though
I don't
think he's
see a 1A or 1B. Actually, Dustin's going to be mine. I'm going to spoiler alert you right now. I was going to go Dustin for both those.
Both biggest disappointment and to win?
Because by definition, as the world's best player, as the player of the year, as the FedEx Cup champion, he should be the guy to win. I don't see him winning this week because so much goes into that. However, I can't imagine in my mind how he doesn't finish inside the top 10.
So Dustin's your lock to top 10?
Correct.
Okay. And my lock to top 10 is Xander Schauffele. Look at what he's done in the U.S. Open. Each of the past 3 years, he's finished inside the top 10. He was the best player at Eastlake. He won the gross division, just in terms of pure number of strokes, over 72 holes at the Tour Championship. And he's the game's premier big game hunter. Since he really burst onto the scene in 2017, he has 6 top 10s. He's there every single time you need him to deliver. And I like the way that he's playing right now. Xander Schauffele is a lock to finish inside the top 10, if not win.
I like lock to finish inside the top 10. That first major is always difficult, but he's certainly played well enough this season. All right, I have given my winner, John Rahm. I'm not going to oscillate from that. Your winner is?
My winner is Dustin Johnson. I know he's going to be disappointing to you, but when you couple the fact of his U.S. Open record, the fact that he is somewhat oblivious to some of the difficulties that he's going to face, and he has the perfect U.S. Open temperament where he's not going to get flustered. He knows that guys are going to make bogeys. You couple that with the fact that his current form is just absolutely off the charts. If he keeps the ball in the fairway, which I think he's intending to do because he's planning to hit more three woods and he even put in a driving iron, he's planning to hit on about 4 holes this week. I don't see how you can beat Dustin Johnson this week.
Just to be clear, I don't want to be misrepresented by you in this. I am not going to be disappointed if Dustin Johnson wins. I would be excited for him to get that second major and certainly everything that he's accomplished this season. I'm writing him as my biggest disappointment for the week, as the obvious reason, as he is the player that everyone is trying to shoot down at the moment, and that's a very, very tough pedestal to hold on to. That's my only reasoning there before you put words in my mouth and say, oh, I can't believe Dustin Johnson won. I'm so disappointed.
That's what you said. I think we can always rewrite the tape later. So if Dustin Johnson finishes 12th this week, you think that's a disappointment?
If Dustin Johnson does anything except win, I think is a disappointment, simply because as the betting favorite.
What?
Absolutely.
This is a Tiger in 0-1.
Again, it kind of is. The way he's played the last few weeks, I don't know that anyone can look at him than it's Tiger-esque. Absolutely. What he did at TPC Boston, you don't think is Tiger-esque? Winning by 10 strokes? At
it was 11. It was 11.
11 strokes.
I was there. I had to write about it. Look, I get it. He went 1-2-1-2. And the fact that he was, third best at the Tour Championship? Look, he's playing great golf. Tiger-esque. Tiger or the field. DJ or the field. Are you nuts?
At this particular time, yes. I agree with you. I'm agreeing that I would pick DJ over the field simply of what he's accomplished so far over the last, let's call him, it's beyond the playoffs.
You would pick DJ over the field?
Right now, just by numbers, by sheer numbers. Again, I keep going back to the idea that your biggest disappointment are two guys that aren't even on the odd sheet because they're outside of that 150-1, which by definition wouldn't be a disappointment because they're not expecting them to win.
Tiger's not
my disappointment.
Top 150-1.
Phil certainly is. Whereas the opposite of that is the favorite to win, according to the odds sheet, I just don't see him getting it done because of all the reasons that you actually pointed out that this is one of the hardest ones to win because there are so many outside factors that you cannot control that come into play when you're trying to win a major championship, certainly this major championship. You get a bad lie, you get a bad bounce, and you lip out a putt, whatever the case may be. That being said, I can't imagine a way that he doesn't finish out inside the top 10 simply because how well he's playing. So, yes, if you gave me DJ versus the field, I think by the numbers, I'd have to pick DJ.
Wow. All right. So, I'm going to take – so, if you take DJ, I'll go ahead and mop up with Rahm, Morikawa, Finau, Webb. Those are all guys – Xander. Those are all guys that I really like this week.
As opposed to Rahm, who I actually made who I picked to win. So before we get too out of bounds here, I'm simply saying just by simple math, by everything that goes into this, yes, you would have to pick DJ versus the field. Everything he's accomplished over the last month and the fact that he has those odds.
I just want to see DJ finish 12th this week so you can just say, ha, I told you, he's gonna disappoint everyone.
That would be a weird sort of flex. I don't think I'm doing that because I'm not going to be disappointed if he wins either. So again, you trying to put words in my mouth is difficult here because I don't want either one of those things to happen. I don't want him to finish 12th, and I certainly want him to win simply because of how magical this would make that season.
All All right. So look, we've got a lot of people who are going to be listening to this. They're filling out their office pools, if they still have office pools, because everyone's just working from home now. Throw out some names of guys that if you're building a five man team, let's say, for this week, I think you have to have DJ anchoring that squad. I like Morikawa this week. I like Webb. I think kind of flies in the face of some of the major championships we've seen recently that have been dominated by long hitters and guys who can kind of overpower golf courses. But he's got a terrific combination of accuracy off the tee and just an absolutely stellar putting. If this is going to come down to who's going to make the most 8 to 10 footers, I think Webb Simpson could easily be in that group of locks to top 10. I really like Webb Simpson this week as well.
Yeah. If you're going five, I think you'd have to put DJ, Rom, JT in that mix. And then my last two would somewhere, I think Colin Morikawa proved a lot at the PGA Championship. He is the only one that's won a major championship this year. If you look at his game, just sort of the nuts and bolts and the five tools that are his game, I think this is a really, really good fit for him. He's going to hit more fairways than most people, and he's going to make more putts than most people when his game is on. My last pick is a little bit out there. We had this discussion the other day. I really like Patrick Cantlay. We talk about guys with good demeanors when it comes to major championships. I think Patrick has that perfect demeanor for this course.
I'm not sure how sleepery he is at this point anymore, but a Matt Fitzpatrick is someone that I think you could take a chance on. You look at the way that he played Muirfield Village. Sleepery, that's definitely not a word. But I think Matt Fitzpatrick, the way that he putts is certainly going to make him a danger man. Tony Finau, I'm about to go head out and catch him as he comes off 18 here. His major record has been terrific. Obviously, we know that he has not won anywhere since 2016, that opposite field event in Puerto Rico, and Wingfoot would be a very difficult one to pick off for the first time in 4 years. But I think it's impossible to ignore what Tony Finau has done in the biggest events as well. If you're looking to maybe go outside the box instead of just relying on the top five or six players in the world.
Yes, because that's what we do, that we give you options. Before we get out of here, I did want to touch on one thing in the USGA. Talked about this, the news last week. They're moving some of their offices to Pinehurst, and they've created what they're calling an anchor site at Pinehurst. The U.S. Open is going to be played at the number two course five times between now and, I believe, 2047, which that'll be about right about the year I think you're planning on retiring. And maybe that'll be your last major.
You can look at 27 years. I'll be 60.
Yeah. So again, I think that's right when you're looking at it.
If I did well in the stock market, maybe a little bit earlier, if I was a little careless with my money, if my kids want to go to private school for college, these are all things I'm going to have to consider by 2047. But thank you.
This conversation led
you to... you will be dead. There is no doubt.
Oh, you'll be dead. Oh, wow.
You'll be 70. You'll be 79.
27 years. Yes.
Oh, yeah, no chance.
Wow, dead.
Zero chance.
All right, that's a happy way to end the podcast. Before we get out of here, though, with the idea that they have made Pinehurst this anchor site, if they're going to come up with a rotation, give me your five best courses, including, of course, Pinehurst, because that would be in the rotation like the Open Championship does, but give me your other four.
Realistically or my wish list?
Sure,
I think I'd love to see Wingfoot. Oakmont isn't a whole lot of fun, but I think if you're looking to have the most complete examination, you got to have Oakmont. You got to have Wingfoot. I like a Shinnecock Hills. We had a great experience there a couple years ago with Brooks winning. And then you got to put Pebble. You got to put Pebble, but you have to go on the West Coast. I think it's great for TV. Obviously, it's a classic golf course. Last year with what Gary Woodland did, he was able to actually put up some good numbers there, but I don't think the USGA was forced to trick up the golf course. It seems to at least somewhat held up stood the test of time. Is that five?
That is
Pinehurst, Pebble, Wingfoot, Oakmont, and Shinnecock?
Yeah.
I like it.
I do too. The only it's not even a correction. I think the only thing I would add to that, I think two West Coast venues is almost a requirement, which would bring me to go back.
Olympic?
No, I would actually put Torrey Pines. I think the U.S. Open that was played at Torrey Pines is historic in our lifetime. What Tiger Woods that happened, the playoff, everything that went into it, I don't know why you would just roll your eyes and make the yuck face the way you did about what can arguably be called the best Open of our generation simply because of how everything played out. And you can't take anything away from the golf course above and beyond the fact that it was the perfect setting for Tiger Woods at his absolute best and his worst because he was a broken man when he won that Open. So that's the only one I would trade out. And I would probably trade it, and this is going to be blasphemy, I would trade it for Shinnecock.
So you would want to have a Pebble, and Torrey, Wingfoot, Oakmont, Pinehurst.
Yes.
Correct. I mean, Torrey is such a forgettable golf course. And yet you have to keep in mind, we were one putt away from Rocco Mediate winning that U.S. Open. You're going to have such fond memories of a legendary U.S. Open golf course if Rocco Mediate wins that? Or do you, or is it simply etched in your mind because Tiger won it on a broken leg?
I'm not going into this revisionist game of yours. We were exactly one putt away from – no, I'm not playing that one. I don't play with it's hypotheticals. You're right. We could sit here and go down the list as well. We could talk about all the things that could have happened at Wingfoot over the dozens of major championships that have been played here. So, no, I'm not going to play that game with you. I think you need two West Coast venues. Maybe L.A. North would change my mind in a few years.
We're going to have an experiment, what, 2023?
Yes, 2023. There? That might change my mind. Certainly, the Olympic Club would stand out as one you'd want to go back to. Although, after freezing to death in Harding Park a few weeks ago, I'm not in any hurry to get back to San Francisco right now. But any of those would do. But in my mind,
what about Chambers Bay? You think that can be an anchor?
No, I don't think it would be an anchor. I think if it's going to be anything, you would add it in once every. Let's give it every two decades. No,
look, I like the idea of having classic golf courses. Torrey Pines, I would not throw in a classic golf course. But I like having the USGA have a rotation of classic golf courses. I'd love to see the PGA of America as being the ones who open their doors to an Erin Hills or a Chambers Bay. They're going to have the golf course in Frisco that they're going to be going to. I think once Torrey Pines gets weeded out after next year's U.S. Open, hopefully, yikes, that can transition into a future PGA venue, a Kiawa Island. I think that's where you can take some chances in terms of your major venues that you're going to have. But I like the idea of the USGA getting centered on five or six classic golf courses that you know they're dependable and you don't have to do a whole lot of trickery in order to present a very demanding challenge for the players.
And we're leaving out Bethpage. And I know that that's difficult when you talk about it. No, it is the PGA Championship. I think as a U.S. Open venue, it stands as a test as well that probably should be considered for no other reason than we talk about public golf all the time. And you came up with a list specifically that's very private heavy, which I understand, but you have to have this cross-section. And that includes East Coast, West Coast venues and public versus private.
Yeah, I mean, I like the idea of having two West Coasts. I would just prefer Olympic over Torrey.
Oh, again, I think LA North is going to be special. All right, well, we'll have plenty to talk about next week when he and I sit down. We won't be together next week.
We could do it from the airport.
Yeah, no, thank you. That'll do it for this Golf Central podcast presented by TaylorMade. We'll see you next week.